This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, 10th of May, 2023. And just want to start off the top of this program and thank everybody for what's been to us an overwhelming response to our survey we're sending out. This will be a weekly survey to help shape the Friday podcast, which we'll be dedicating to our listeners. And I think the format we did for this first survey will be quite good. And we might sort of take up a similar approach to future ones where there's maybe two questions that are sort of a poll. And so you can get an idea how the rest of the Saxo Market Call community is thinking about markets and predicting what's going to happen out the curve. And then a couple where we are asking us, the Saxo Market Call crew, what you'd like to hear on the Friday podcast, the topics for discussion, and sort of a chance to any free comments you have. And again, thank you so much for the responses. It's really been quite incredible to hear what people are thinking. A couple of surprises in there, and also some wonderful and humorous suggestions for meme t-shirts, et cetera. So we appreciate that. One of the best things I think I've seen was we asked about the length of the podcast, and there were twice as many said they wish it was longer than that it was shorter, but there was actually very little focus on that question on the length, and you prefer to hear more details on topics, et cetera. I think that really encourages the notion and our idea to include or to make one of our weekly podcasts, most likely the Wednesday, something we might call something like the helicopter edition every week, where we spend very little time on the daily wrap and take a deeper dive into a couple of topics, a bit more of a freeform conversation where the length, there's less discipline in terms of the length. So thank you for that. Again, you can find the link to the survey on slide two in today's slide deck, or just look at the podcast description and your podcast app or wherever you are accessing the podcast. All right, to today's markets. And gosh, Peter, there's not a whole lot to report. Really feels like markets are in a holding pattern here. Ahead of the CPI number, a great, I think, John Author's column in Bloomberg talking about the CPI may matter less where we are and whether the Fed is going to pause or eventually cut, as the market thinks, than the employment data, arguing that just because inflation is coming down doesn't necessarily mean the Fed is going to cut. We'll have to see impacts into employment. That's the far more powerful sort of tonic for getting the Fed to move on rates. But not a whole lot to report in markets, but there have been a couple of interesting earnings coming in, and as well Druckenmiller, as we put on the first on slide three here with that headline warning of a U.S. hard landing. Interesting call by a very, of course, very famous and credible investor from many decades. So your assessment of markets here before we roll forward.
Well, it's a little bit the same assessment as yesterday with, we're still in the range that we established in the S&P 500 futures since the early April, very quiet markets. I think that if we, the worst case scenario for equities today, I agree. I mean, the U.S. inflation data point is just one data point. It's an important data point for the Fed longer term. They want a sustained low inflation. And we've talked about that on the podcast before. What does that mean? Well, most arguably a 6 month rolling average of core inflation getting close to around 2, maybe 2.5% before we can even talk about cutting rates, unless we get a crisis. And that, I suspect, is a little bit what Standard Druckenmiller is sort of indicating with a hard landing, that we need some exogenous shock to the system that comes and surprise everyone, and then you can get the cutting going. I don't think the 75 basis point cut priced in the forward curve right now makes sense with the normal economy where it is, unless we get a crisis. So that's the clues that we're all looking for. And in the meantime, we're just waiting for this inflation report to be released. And the reason why I'm saying that an upside surprise to the inflation number could be what could shake the markets a little bit here in equities in the short term is that if you look at the 1 week performance on our theme baskets, like we're still on slide three in today's slide deck, you can see that next gen medicine, which is basically very high duration, very high beta biotechnology stocks, bubble stocks, cybersecurity, payments, we have some very high beta stuff there that have gained a lot, and those are more sensitive to any changes, I think, to inflation and the interest rates. So to keep that in mind, if we get that upside surprise, and then also just note the weakness that we're seeing in our Chinese baskets down there. It's quite incredible. It actually deserves, John, and I try to make a broader discussion in my equity note yesterday on China versus luxury stocks and what's going on in China, you know, the old economy, if you will, versus maybe the new, more consumption-driven economy. I think it actually warrants a deeper discussion at one point on this podcast.
Yeah, that could be one of our topics for the Wednesday edition, perhaps starting as early as next week with that. And we've talked about, and by the way, Druckenmiller, a couple of things he cites in terms of why he thinks the recession risk has been brought forward was the decline in U.S. retail sales, but also the banking turmoil, which, as we know, is tightening credit conditions across the market. But and especially with that banking turmoil, it being regional banks, and because two-thirds, I believe it is, approximately, of commercial real estate loans have been made by these regional banks. And where there's an issue with commercial real estate, both because of changed behavior in terms of office space needs post-pandemic, et cetera. But you're concentrating, looks like, Peter, on Blackstone on that front. Pretty remarkable divergence there in performance relative to the broader market.
Yeah, so the chart itself here on slide four, I'm actually comparing the U.S. REITs, the total index, which is the light blue line there, and I'm comparing it to the office REIT total return index, which is the dark blue line there, because that is the one that has really been in trouble. First, we had the pandemic, then we had work from home, then we got the interest rate shock. So you basically just, you know, stomach punches from you know, left, right, and center for this part of the market. And the big question is that we've talked about it. So there is a potential and existential risk to a large part of the long tail of U.S. regional banks because of the potential asset liability mismatch. You know, how sticky is the funding source? And then we have all these commercial real estate loans. To me, I think it's a market that is a little bit difficult to get a fully detailed perspective on, because how big and how important is this office market relative to the total market? Because it's right. I mean, if you look at the office market, what a catastrophe! The total return index is down to some of the lows that we saw during the Great Financial Crisis. I mean, it's absolutely horrible. And then you have the more broader market, which is a combination of industrial buildings, logistics buildings. It's also hotels and resorts. It's residential, etc. And that market, more diversified, is holding up still. So I'm leaning that we're seeing weakness, but it's there, again, it's a lot of idiosyncratic risk related, and especially to the West Coast office building markets. And Blackstone, we're highlighting that because I still have my left eye on this private equity market, because the private equity companies are really big in real estate. Also here in Europe, the U.S. ones have really been gobbling up a lot of assets, and they are showing vulnerability and weakening signals in both the investor commitments, uncalled commitments, but also they show weakness also in their fees, etc. So this is something to worry about if credit conditions deteriorate further from here.
All right. We have FX on the following slide, slide five. Not a whole lot to talk about. I think the only thing I want to raise is we did see euro dollar consolidating and testing those two-plus week lows around 109.50. But sterling strength is probably one of the biggest new developments. If you look at euro sterling, especially the most important sterling cross, arguably, new lows for the year. Below 87 coming into the Bank of England tomorrow. I'm shaking my head at this a little bit. Euro sterling maybe, but I need to see more trouble in Europe than I think seeing that there's tremendous additional UK upside here. Part of that is the yield spread widening in favor of sterling, but the idea that the Bank of England is set to become the most credible central bank on, you know, further tightening of policy to get real rates higher, I struggle with that notion a bit. So I think a big test, given where sterling has moved to ahead of this meeting, whether the Bank of England event risk can sort of support these latest developments. I think a lot of it is unwinding of prior shorts, and we're getting pretty much back to neutral on sterling positioning.
Yeah, and there was also an important data point that came out just recently on wages and wage growth in the UK, and it looks you can argue from a, you know, the people's perspective, it's good because it really now catching up with inflation, but it's also a little bit alarming, I guess, if you're Bank of England, John, because that's a lot of pressure. Yeah. On the wages.
And then the tightening results and the worsening of the recession. Plus, you have the latest Rick's house price balance reminding us that the house prices are under pressure, and there's a lot of loans that are resetting, and that's going to impact, of course, private balance sheets and the private incomes and disposable income in particular. But certainly a technical situation that bears watching, especially after cable as well broke to new highs before going sideways a little bit. Ola, we're letting you out of the discussion far too long here. We have crude oil bouncing It needs to bounce a heck of a lot more to get out from the sort of under the the shadow of this latest massive sell-off after the OPEC production cut announcement that saw that big burst higher and then a huge retreat. So what's your focus here as you look at the crude oil market? Is a lot of it on a growth, or is it on the dynamics of supply and demand?
Well, still that it's very much a short-term trader-focused market. If you're trying to find momentum in this market, you are being steamrolled on a regular basis. And we've seen this again just over the past week where the market has bounced quite strongly. And but as you say, John, as well, we're running into some resistance here at that 77.50 level on Brent. You can see it's the first Fibonacci, important Fibonacci number. So just indicating that for now, the correction we've seen or the bounce has been a relatively weak one, and we need a breakthrough in order for that to change the overall sentiment in the market. But the trigger we had yesterday was first the weakness from the Chinese import data, crude oil imports dropping 18%. That sent prices lower, only to reverse later in the day when the U.S. government finally announced that they were considering. How to refill or replenish the strategic reserves. You can see in the bottom right and side down slide 6 how the strategic reserves has been hammered hard in recent months. There's no doubt that they're not going to refill because there's no need for that crude oil, because US is almost a net export of crude oil these days. So but taking advantage of these lower prices makes sense. And I think together with OPEC Plus, and they're actively managing of the oil market, I think we have a soft floor in the making here in the oil market from two major sources of that could take supply out of the market. So so I think that will overall continue to add support to the market. And then just recently the drop in diesel margins that we talked about for the last months, which we had as one of the together with the gap filling as our main concerns and reason why we saw crude oil coming down, we can see that they have started to stabilize and actually picking up a little bit. And if today's EIA report is confirming another reasonably sized drop in distillate stocks, which includes diesel, then that could further underpin the recovery there. Also, just remember the ICE gas oil contract in trade in Europe is the benchmark for diesel contracts, diesel and jet fuel and so on, and that the speculative short that hit a 7-year high last week. So there's plenty of shorts to be chased if we start to see a bounce there.
Yeah, I can't help but look. I was listening to a very interesting podcast yesterday on EVs, and specifically Chinese EVs, after somebody notable visited the Shanghai Auto Show. I guess it's called the Shanghai Auto Show. And looking at some of the news about the penetration of EVs in China, it is absolutely spectacular. The growth rate, 29% in 2022. And then they're going very quickly into the low end in terms of price in coming years. I think it's going to be very interesting longer term, and maybe a subject for one of our Wednesday helicopter editions to look at what is the future of oil demand if this transformation unfolds more rapidly than expected. And I wonder how much it's holding a heavy hand on the forward part of the curve. And if you look out, beyond the next year to 3-4 years in the future.
That could it will have an impact. And again, just adding to the short-term problems, because until we see that drop off in demand, then obviously someone needs to continue to produce the oil that's required on a daily basis, and that's probably why we in the short term or in the medium term still could be facing higher prices before the drop off. And just regarding the long term prospects, obviously we will keep an eye on the monthly oil market reports that comes out. Today we have tomorrow we have OPEC, and then later in the week next week we have the IEA. After the EIA yesterday came out with theirs, so we keep an eye on their projections. Just to finishing off the commodity space on slide 7, just a quick look at the agricultural sector, because it really has been the year of the softs so far, led by sugar and coffee. Very strong gains so far. While the grain sector, which is, I suppose, from an inflationary perspective, the most important sector to keep an eye on, has been trailing. And we're now starting to see the first expectations for what kind of production we could face or see this coming season. We'll have a WASDE report out on Friday, which will include the first estimates for the the ending stocks at the end of this current season, which runs to August next year. And as I've borrowed from Karen Brown at Reuters, just highlighting the estimates, and as you can see, if these are going to come through, then corn ending stocks could be there at a 5-year high and soybeans at a 4-year high, while wheat stocks will still be at a probably a bit trailing at a 9-year low. But this could potentially trigger some fireworks on Friday when that report comes out.
Okay, look forward to that. In the meantime, we have lots of earnings rolling in, Peter. As earnings season rolls on, you've highlighted Airbnb yesterday, but you've got a couple of the names as well there on slide 8 for stocks to watch today.
Yeah, here in Europe, we have Vestas reporting a little bit better, or not a little bit, actually much better Q1 revenue figures and EBIT, but there's a lot of timing issues with because they changed the way they account for revenue after they deliver orders to investors, and that means that there could be significant time mismatches from estimates and what they actually report. So keep that in mind. They are reiterating their fiscal year guidance on revenue and EBIT margin. So the EBIT margin guidance is -2% to +3%, if I'm correct. Shares are up almost 3% here in Copenhagen trading, but the problem for Vestas is still very high input costs still, and a lot of uncertainty on future growth because permits are coming in at a very slow pace for offshore wind and also onshore wind. It's very clear from the data over the past 2-3 years that it's really the solar panel that are driving a lot of the rise in the renewable energy. You can also see that in the BP's annual energy outlook report, which is a fascinating report, by the way. You can see here that is where the acceleration is, where the costs are coming down the most, et cetera, et cetera. So, the outlook is, I would say, a little bit murky for Vestas here. And then Toyota. So Toyota is out with Q4. So their fiscal year ends in March. So their Q4 results were pretty okay. I mean, revenue was up almost 20%, operating income up 35%. The weak yen, of course, is helping a lot of the foreign sales that are translated back into yen. They also said that semiconductor bottlenecks are really easing now. They're really getting optimistic on the next fiscal year, which will end in March next year. So the fiscal year 2024. And the guidance on revenue and operating income is in line with the estimates, and they are expecting unit sales of 11.4 million units. That would be a new record for Toyota if they hit that. So, very interesting.
Any guidance that you noted anyway on EVs from Toyota? That's been the big question mark for them.
I was looking through that. Maybe I didn't get deep enough. We have this discussion with the new CEO that came in for Toyota, acknowledging the mistake by Toyota by focusing. Not a mistake to focus on hybrids, but focusing too much on hybrids and not running a parallel program on battery EVs. So we're still waiting for that big splash announcement, just like we got from Volkswagen over, 2 years ago, when they really announced, okay, we're going to invest 40 billion euros over this number of years to catch up with Tesla. We're waiting for that big announcement from Toyota. And I think the window of opportunity is closing in, if you can say that. We'll be tracking that story. And then Airbnb, as you mentioned, John, I was actually expecting a little bit of a potential upside surprise to Airbnb because the report so far from other travel-related companies had been quite positive. That was not what we got. We got a small beat on Q1 and the operating income, but the Q2 revenue guidance, and especially the guidance on average daily rate, so that actually they are expecting that to decline here in Q2, and that obviously is a potential hit to margins. It's also an indication that demand might be softening here, and investors certainly didn't like that, and they sent the shares down 12%.
Okay, then what is on your radar today? I noticed that Disney is up today. That's a big one.
Disney is a big one. Disney has been part of a battle, if you can say. Bob Iger, the CEO that returned to Disney, has been in a battle with activist investors over their cost and lack of profitability, and especially the Disney Plus that very quickly hit a 100 million paying subscribers. But the argument and discussion point here is that it's the price point has been too low to get to this volume. It's not profitable enough, and we talked about it. The whole discussion. Warren Buffett was commenting on Paramount Global, which is one of his bigger investments, and they're cutting dividends, so they're seeing pricing pressure. And he talked about the streaming that with the streaming services is really potentially eroding pricing power on content, etc. It's a difficult business, he said. And he was almost hinting that we need some consolidation. So very curious to see what Disney is reporting. They also still have some pent-up demand, I think, in some of their more physical, their amusement and entertainment parks as well. The comparables compared to last year because of the lockdown still favorable on the revenue growth side of things. Otherwise, it's going to be a little bit quiet from here. Also, as you can see, tomorrow, Thursday, I don't think personally there are a lot of interesting companies, but then we'll close off the week with Richemont, Société Générale, and Allianz here in Europe.
Yep, and that takes us to the macro calendar, the focus naturally on the US April CPI release. I put up a chart, I put in the quick take, I put in yesterday's FX update, of the reaction function to the last four CPI releases. And I think it's a couple things are clear. First of all, that there's been an awfully few surprises, and they've been modest ones in large part to these to the expectations. So if you look at the chart I put it there on slide 10, you can see both the expected CPI numbers for month on month, year on year for both headline and core, what the actual data proved to be. And then I put the reaction to these data points in dollar yen, euro dollar, US 2-year, US 10-year, NASDAQ, and S&P 500, both sort of the maximum point of reaction before the close of that day, and not the cash session, but sort of the clock running out on the day, and where the price was at the end of the day. And obviously, there's some things like if you go back to the February CPI release on March 14th, this was in the days after the huge crisis unleashed by the Silicon Valley bank collapse. So there's just that was a huge distraction. But taking last month, it was kind of interesting because you saw some clearly negative surprises on the headline, even though the core held up quite strongly as expected. And the dollar yen and euro dollar reaction sort of stuck on the day, the dollar falling on the day. But there was not a huge the reaction. The stock market was very interesting. Market tried to rally. Hey, this is lower inflation. This is good news. But into the day, actually sharply lower. I think a very interesting reaction pattern there. I'm not sure what the takeaways are from all of this, but I think it's worth considering the trading ranges and the potential for reaction if we get a surprise. Very few, again, of which we have seen, especially for the core data over the last 4 months. And keep in mind, authors, John Authors of Bloomberg indicating, and I firmly support that it's really the jobs front where we need to see some stress before we can get, sort of justify Fed rate cuts. Okay, I think it's been a bit of a long one today, but hopefully a good one. And we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.